Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As the entire world strives to become better equipped to fight an emerging infectious disease, public health measures, interventions, and even vaccines can have different impacts in different communities. Historically, Native American communities suffer worse health outcomes than any other population group in the United States. Today, we welcome Joe Arischetta to the program. He's vice president of the Native Biodata Consortium. It's the first 501c3 nonprofit research institute led by indigenous scientists and tribal community members in the U.S. He's joining us today to talk about health equity, advances in genomics, and new leverage from the National Institutes of Health. Also with us, Guthrie Ducheneau, president of Native Biodata Consortium. Joe, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
And Guthrie Ducheneau, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you as well. Thank you very much.
Joe, I want to start with you. You've joined us on the program before to talk a little bit about your work, but for people who need a refresher, give us an overview of Native Biodata Consortium.
So we are what's normally called a biobank, but we wanted to add not only the biological samples in our repository, but we wanted to house the data as well, raw data, analyzed data, and data sets that can be used for secondary analysis. And we want to do that because we are in a big data and big omics, big genomics environment. And this technology has a great promise to move the ball forward in terms of solving health disparity and coming up with innovative treatments. But as you know, a lot of Native American communities are disempowered in that regard. And they don't have the expertise or the infrastructure to handle this kind of research on their own. And so the Native Biodata Consortium is a way to get that process started.
Guthrie, tell us a little bit about how this mission and the work that you do is through the lens of COVID-19 and through the lens of sort of what we've seen globally and are paying attention to in 2020 more than ever. What part of that makes you just even more determined to express your mission to people?
Well, I think one of the things that the pandemic has shown us all is that we are connected, whether we would like it or not, and that we all depend on one another. I think that's a good lesson for us to remember, that we do need one another in order for everyone to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. We need to make sure that everybody is aligned in that mission. So I think every century or so we have an opportunity. It's a terrible type of opportunity, but I think we have an opportunity to kind of realign and to understand that regardless of how we identify, there's a deeper relationship that we all share, which is that of being human. With that in mind, what we found traditionally, and I think you mentioned it a little bit in the intro, is that Native people have suffered kind of unduly in a lot of these with a lot of these health related conditions, and I think the data would show that the same is true with what we're experiencing through this COVID epidemic. The key word that Joe mentioned earlier is infrastructure. The place where generally we fall behind is the fact that we don't have the infrastructure in place. So if you want to use a little bit more simple to understand analogy, imagine running or driving on an improved road that's paved and doesn't have any potholes in it, and then step off that road or drive off that road and try to run or drive out in the middle of a pasture somewhere. You're going to realize very quickly how important the infrastructure is. It don't make any difference how fast you are or how nice your car is. If you're driving in those unimproved conditions, the obstacles in your way there will cause you to slow down and fall behind. And we've been falling behind for quite a while in with respect to health issues and a myriad of other issues as well. But health issues are very important because they're a one-to-one direct relationship to how we're feeling every day. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get our cars and our runners back onto a road that is improved so that we can start keeping pace and maybe even outpacing in some instances those that would generally leave us behind.
Joe, the work that you're doing is gaining national attention in some pretty exciting ways. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
It's kind of hard to know where to start, but myself and several Native academics from around the world, whether it's Australia or New Zealand, Canada, or the United States or Mexico, have been blowing this trumpet for at least 25 years. And because I think of COVID and this last year with Black Lives Matter and a lot of other very obvious racial disparities, we're starting to finally get noticed in terms of the power of science currently and the kind of the status quo of certain people get to benefit from that power and other people don't. And we've been saying for a long time that this eventuality is going to happen and that we have to start changing the system-wide things that prevent people of color and Native Americans from benefiting from these new technologies and opportunities. And so we at the Biobank are continuing our research that we started over 11 years ago, but now we're actually helping with the COVID epidemic in terms of very population-specific outcomes from COVID.
And some attention from NIH, from the National Institutes of Health as well, Joe?
Yeah. So the initiation of the Native Biodata Consortium was actually a partnership between Stanford University and the Shiner-Rasu tribe. And they were able to write a grant back in 2015, which got funded. And that's the operating budget we've been using to develop a lot of the infrastructure and policies around the Native Biodata Consortium. And so now we're at the point where we're functional. And again, through that partner, it's called CEER, like the center grant. Through that partner, we were able to get a supplement for COVID response. And we hopefully will add to the monitoring and tracking of COVID, but also provide enough background data about pre-existing conditions, people's response to vaccination or emergency therapies, and things that might not be prevalent or noticeable in other populations. We want to make sure that things are tailored to this population so they don't suffer greater adverse effects from COVID and the treatments.
Mm. Guthrie, let's talk about that infrastructure and something one of you, I think it was Joe, mentioned earlier, which is the people benefiting from the work. It's not just about getting solutions for Indigenous people. It's about Indigenous scientists doing the work and students learning and being invited into a lab. Let's talk about that for a moment, Guthrie.
I mean, there's examples. Plenty of examples of how influential it can be in a person's life to be told that you're not supposed to be doing something. There's a savage meme or trope that says that young women are not as good at math. And so because of that, a lot of young women don't pursue math careers. The same types of things have happened in Native communities forever. Because of the lack of infrastructure that we've mentioned, a lack of seeing brown faces do the types of things we're doing, it has never been instilled in some of our young people that that type of thing is possible. The work that Joe and Crystal Soze and Keolu Fox and Matthew Anderson and others that are associated with our biobank that are all either PhDs or working on their PhDs in some of these very complicated fields. The very fact that we have those people involved in the leadership of our organization shows those young brown faces that, hey, you can do this too. And you should be doing this. Not only can you, but you should be doing this. And so the result of that is going to be huge for us. It's going to help us to start fighting back against the idea that research has always been done to us, and instead it should be done with us, for us, and by us. Who better than people growing up in these communities are going to understand the people growing up in these communities and the communities like ours, not just our communities, but they're across the country. And not just Native communities, but other communities that experience the same types of things that we experienced growing up in poverty. So I think what we're doing is to maybe be a little risky with the analogy, is we're trying to vaccinate our people against our own version of a pandemic that we've been going through since contact. Hmm.
Joe, will you tell us a little bit about, you know, you're a PhD candidate and you're doing this work that sometimes I don't even understand. And it's, I don't even understand sometimes the basic definition of what you do, but it's so fascinating and I love learning more. But there had to be a time where you believed that this was something that you could do and make a life doing. Can you tell me something about your sort of early inclination to science? Because I don't think I've ever asked you that before.
Oh, I love that question. Thank you for that question. Actually, I'm 54, and I turned today am attending a conference at the University of Manitoba, Winnipeg, and I'm talking to a lot of young scientists at the moment all day long that are doing this kind of research, and they've asked a similar question. I'm a late bloomer, and I was always, you know, my family was poor, and we grew up in the inner city of Chicago, but my family always valued education, and they always made sure that I did my homework and got good grades. And my mom was really the one who pushed me towards medicine, and unfortunately, when I got to pre-med, I did well, but then I started to lose interest after a while, and it just didn't really speak to me that way. And, you know, just to survive, I used all the skills that I gained through my pre-med program to start doing research. And I didn't do it because it was necessarily a choice. I did it because those are the skills that I had. But after I joined a lab at Loyola University in Chicago, I really became passionate about research. And that passion was further stoked after I had a lab accident where I couldn't work in a lab for almost 2 years. I couldn't be around chemicals or animals or anything. And so I had to learn how to use my scientific skills in a different way. And so I began teaching science, and that led into somebody noticing my teaching ability and asking me to come and do internships around the country with other young people and inspire them, you know, as a brown face or a person of color. And that led into the work that I'm doing now, which is genomics, which has quite a bit of research and science to it, but it also has a lot of teaching in terms of tribal sovereignty, tribal culture, basic bioethics, law, and you name it, me and Guthrie do it now. So I think that my passion was stoked by my parents, but I didn't really found my own personal drive until it became an issue like this, where it's so important to have Native people not be left behind.
We have been talking with Joe Irichetta and Guthrie Ducheneau with the Native Biodata Consortium. We will definitely have them back in the future. Joe, thanks so much for being here today and for sharing just a little bit of that story as well. Look forward to hearing more.
Thank you very much.
President Ducheneau, thank you as well.
Thank you, ma'am.